Hello, it's Monday, June 26th. You're listening to the DreamStation.cc video game show. I'm your host, Chris. This is show number 61. Check out our website, DreamStation.cc, for news, reviews, interviews, forums, podcast feeds, and our downloadable show archive. You want to send us an email, audio is preferred, videogameshow@DreamStation.cc. With us today, we have Keith.
Who would win in a fight, a vampire pigeon or a werewolf penguin? Just something to ponder. Just throwing it out there. Ponder.
We have Phil with us today.
In memory of Bob, I'll be referred to as and other.
We have Tom with us today.
Vampire pigeon, because it can fly and come around back and bite the penguin in the neck.
Eventually, we'll have Bob. We actually gave Bob a little phone call. He was at a restaurant. He's forgotten all about us because he's on West Coast time, and it's only 3:30 there. Mr. Fancy Pants.
Fancy Pants, Californian people. I understand how it is.
He actually dyed his hair and bought all sleeveless shirts to hang out on the beach with and flip-flop sandals. What will be on the agenda for this week? We have what's new at Dream Station, of course. What are we playing? Uwe Boll to fight critics. Ghost Recon content rant. Of course you knew it was coming. We have part two of our Ross Erickson interview. Ross was on the show last week. We got a lot of good feedback from him now that his head is huge.
Wait, someone's head's huge? Like a melon head?
Yes. Melon head is an Ohio urban legend here in northeastern Ohio.
If you people don't visit the forums, then you have no idea what we're talking about. See what you miss when you don't visit the Dream Station forums.
Porting games to the next generation. This will be like the fourth time we're going to try and put up the interview that I had with John Picaro. Godfrey and I interviewed him when we were in Seattle, about a month ago now. We have our forum question. We have our mailbag.
Mailbag.
Next topic.
This week's show music was done by Failed Halo. Failed Halo was a local Cleveland band, and I heard some of their music. They were decent, and they sent me some stuff to use. So,
are they gamers?
They are. They're around high school age. I will have their MySpace site on the show notes, because they don't have an official website. So first of all, I want to welcome those of you who are arriving to our podcast through all the various and assorted pimpages. I think we mentioned Major Nelson, Gamertag Radio hooked us up. The local Brunswick Sun-Times, if you are a local northeastern Ohio. But either way, we're welcome aboard and we're glad to have you.
It's Ohio in.
So what we do in housekeeping is we clarify any issues that we had last show, and we also talk about some things that are not quite long enough or in-depth enough to actually have a full topic dedicated to them. One of the biggest things that I did have to clean up, though, is I don't know that I mentioned that Xbox 360 version of Battle for Middle-Earth 2 will have unit balance patches applied.
Are we going to get the game balance patches on the 360? And your answer was, of course...
A resounding yes.
Yes, excellent.
They always overpower or underpower certain units because it's just hard to get that balance correct. All the patches that are off of the PC will be applied to the Xbox 360. I view that as a legitimate patch that's not rushing out a game and trying to fix it post going gold.
I think we should stop pretending then that there's a big difference between consoles. In terms of hassle that's involved in maintaining your games, is there a difference now between PCs and consoles?
I think consoles still use more user-friendly than the PC.
So Steam just automatically updates. I don't have to think about it.
You still have to install everything, run the drivers, all that other shit. With a console, it's still just open the game, put it in, patches in that sense, it'll do it.
In PC,
the gap is closing.
You do have an extra step of installing, but there's a benefit from that extra one step that we have to take. That benefit is we now don't have load times.
Usually they're much less than the console, I will give you
You're
that.
Right, I take that back. Now that I'm a City of Villains player, and apparently every other screen's a load screen. Way to go, Cryptic. Way to shove my words right back into my mouth.
You might want to mention also that there's going to be a video posted by Microsoft from that Peter Moore interview.
Yes, I was just going to get to that. Some of the video...
Are we going to see your ugly mug on Xbox Live?
Yes, unfortunately we will. It's pretty ugly.
So it's not enough we have to stare at his ugly avatar every week?
No, you have to actually see my ugly mug on the video. Yes, some of that stuff from the Battle for Middle-Earth EA Community Summit is now making its rounds, so...
So there you go, female Dream Station listeners. Everything you've always wished for.
Oh, here's an interesting story. So I get home today. My wife, Heather, was actually laid off of her job a couple weeks ago. So I walk in today, and I'm not that chauvinistic, but she's usually pretty good about has the dinner out, everything's all set to go. So I walk in, there's a DDR mat laying in the middle of the living room, all the furniture's moved out of the way, and she's sitting in the chair playing Xbox Live Uno. With the headset, it's gone. It's officially gone. Unemployment has officially sucked her into Xbox Live Arcade. I have to say, I was kind of turned on. It was a little bit of a different side.
And the show's gone creepy.
She gave me the shh finger. I started talking, and she's going shh. And now I know just how it feels when I do that to other people.
So wait, so if you're playing C. Paladino on Xbox Live and you're getting your ass kicked, it's probably not you playing?
Probably Heather. That's probably Bob. Hang on.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
All right,
hello.
You're recording?
You got it?
Yes, we ruined our bit. Thanks a lot, Bob.
No. I got one even better. This is Notorious Bob reporting live from EA Studios, Redwood Shores, California.
Are you sitting in the driveway?
I'm sitting against the sign. I wish nice. I had a picture of me. It's awesome.
Bob, again, for those that don't know, he's now a DreamWorks employee, so he's out in Redwood City, California, along with all the other cool people. And he's chilling, I guess, in EA parking lot, podcasting from EA.
They turn on the sprinklers, and I'm going to have to run like... people staring at me. It's awesome.
So that's why Bob's sound quality is a little off.
Bad audio. What's our excuse next week?
We'll think of something else.
To finish up this, Heather, on Xbox Live all the friggin' time, I think we're on to something, because as a chick gamer, kind of flirting with the guys, she's up there yakking away, she's pimping the podcast, people are like, oh, I'll have to check it out, because a girl spoke to me on Xbox Live. She did mention an idea. I guess we could hit on this in housekeeping. Foreigners on Xbox Live. What I'm seeing more and more is people talking to you in odd languages that don't sound like American English.
You know, like Canadian.
I know. What the hell are those people doing on the internet? Get off the internet!
Don't you have a field to till? I joke to our friends in Zimbabadushka. The wiki. I want to pimp the wiki again. The wiki, Keith.
DreamStation.wikispaces.com.
There was a rumor going around that the 360 is going to have its price lowered soon, and John Picaro on the GamerScore blog said, no, that's not true. And
how did that rumor get started?
I believe the rumor got started because people are just waiting. They don't want to get the 360 because they're like, oh, I was saving up for the PS3, and now maybe I'll wait.
Okay, so there's all this like pent-up consumer energy on the internet, and it just overflowed into this spontaneous rumor of a price drop for the Xbox.
That's my opinion. People are really hoping, and they're like, well, this would be the perfect time to lower the price.
Yeah, I like it. Hey, I'm buying into it right now. I can't wait for the Xbox 360 price drop now. I hope it's next week.
Next topic.
We have a DreamStation review up on the site. It's a review of Rub Rabbits for the Nintendo DS.
What?
In Japan, the game is called Where Do Babies Come From? So let's just... for real. I don't know if we can say a whole lot. There's a multiplayer mode in which people, you and your partner, it's called baby making mode, and you cut a cake with your partner, and the better you do, the more compatible you are. That's more than enough for your consumption for the week of reviews.
Yeah, I gotta get a DS now. Look what I'm missing.
Next topic.
What have we been playing this past week? The top three games. I have had a busy week, but I did manage to play a whole crap ton of Uno on Xbox Live Arcade. I also had the opportunity to play with some people that had an Xbox Live camera that comes out September 19th. Pictures up on my Flickr account. C. Palladino is my name on Flickr. It's also my gamer tag, incidentally, but the video quality was actually pretty good, and it made Uno is like, okay of a game. With your friends, it's pretty fun. With the camera with your friends, it's actually one of the best games in Xbox. You do get live camera feeds for people who are not on your friends, which is some of the things that we were talking about being worried about as far as showcasing certain body parts after certain draw four plays, things like that. But
their fault for playing Uno with somebody named Detective Scroat.
And I played the demos, MotoGP, which was a good demo, and Hitman, the demo for that, which was a horrid piece of turd.
Oh my god, that thing was horrible to the eyes.
MotoGP was good though. Keith, what did you play in the last 7 days?
Played some World of Warcraft, some City of Villains, and some Maddens, because I couldn't figure out what Grawl spelled.
Phil?
World of Warcraft, played Madden 2006 for the Xbox, Burnout 3, whatever it was, for the Xbox.
Tom?
I beat the crap out of Keith in Fight Night for the Xbox 360. If it counts, like what I did with Ghost Recon actually constitutes playing that game.
Tom played for a couple minutes and then threw the remote down in disgust and said, this game sucks, these controls are horrible, and he walked away, literally. We were just like, dude, you're counting against our total lives for the team, stop.
And to show you how desperate I was for gaming this week, I actually played City of Villains by myself. Oh, that reminds me, I'm locked out of my Steam account, and man, am I... They have an option for send me my password. So I say, send me my password. And so far, I have not received anything. So I don't know if there's something going around, some account hijacking. Somebody fix it by 9 o'clock tonight.
Bob, did you actually manage to play anything this week?
The Tetris demo on my phone.
Well, that's what we were playing this week here at DreamStation.
Next topic.
Uwe Boll to fight critics. Physically, literally, fight critics. critics. Yes, folks, a very vocal minority, according to him, say that his movies are so horrible and they're giving him all kinds of slack, when in reality, it's not the vocal minority, it's the majority. But during filming of the Game Turn movie Postal, he's going to have a boxing match in the movie. He's going to take five of his most vocal critics. He's going to be physically boxing his five most vocal critics. The fights will also be televised pay-per-view on the internet, of course. You have to be between 140 and 190 pounds and have written at least two negative articles about him in the year 2005.
Oh, dude, it's on.
Keith, there is no way you're getting down to 190 pounds, even if you fill your entire body with helium.
I could just lop off my right arm and leg.
Yeah, so I give Uwe a little bit of credit for having the nads to fight his critics, but we'll see how this actually turns out. And of course, it'll be pay for watch on the internet.
Next topic.
Let's discuss the Ghost Recon Marketplace content. If you happen to be a member of my friends list or check the forum over the weekend, you'll notice that I was flaming ticked off. They have some new co-op maps. I believe there's four new campaign missions. There's about five new weapons. And they relit some of the original maps. So some of the original maps that came with the game, you can now select the time of day at which to play them. I'm like, hey, that's pretty cool. They promised that they were going to give us new content. This is wonderful. It's $15. They charge $15, which is like 25% of the total cost of the game, for this expansion pack content. I'm going to take the side of defending the Ghost Recon $15 content. And you guys are...
There's honestly only... I mean, I could do that. There's a very easy way to defend it.
How's that?
People will pay for it.
That's the key.
Nothing else needs to be said. People are dumb enough to buy it. They're making money.
Part two of the Ross Erickson interview, he mentioned the Oblivion horse armor. A lot of people on the forums all over the place, very ticked off because there's a lot of 200 marketplace points.
You know what, though? If you don't want it, don't buy it.
Problem is, we're all going to whine and complain and moan about this $15 content, and then people are going to buy it anyways. And what that's going to do is that's going to set the next content expansion to be $17.50 instead of $15. And then it's going to go to $20. And then they're going to find the happy medium. And I'm so worried that people out there, for all of their whining and complaining, they're going to buy it. And the people that I've talked to that have purchased the content, they say, hey, the extra chapters are really cool. Co-op is really fun, but it really wasn't worth $15.
They're going to get them, though, because it's such a convenient thing to do. I mean, you're just sitting there, you're like, yeah, I want some more content. $15, all I gotta do is press A. A.
You're not spending $15, you're spending 1,200 marketplace points or something.
It's like yen.
And in addition to that, you can't buy just $15 worth of marketplace points, because it's like some hot dog math where you need 8 hot dogs, and how many buns do I have to buy if they come in packs of 12, and you're doing like lowest common denominators and stuff. So you ended up with double the amount of points that you need. So then, of course, you're like, well, now what do I do with this extra $5? Well, I might as well buy this other stupid thing that I didn't really want. Let's get some gamer pictures, pay companies to advertise their product. Everybody on Xbox Live is like, hey, dude, where's your gamer picture from? And I say, oh, it's from Dead Rising. Oh, wait, I've just now given out pimps to Dead Rising.
Oh, by the way, Chris, when we were over yesterday, I bought a 2-liter of Pepsi for $1.19.
There's the backstory on that is that basically I'm cheap and I don't like...
Frugal, my friend, frugal.
You got that from your dad. There's nothing wrong with it. Now, if you excuse me, I'm going to go across the street and buy one for $2.50.
I know, $3 gas. Chris shrugs his shoulders. $1.50 Coke. Oh, God.
Person that doesn't have the game already goes out and buys the game, it's kind of useless for them to play it as is out of the box without all the additional...
No, I mean, it's worth the $60. It was a pretty good game. It's just the main point to this whole thing is vote with your wallet. If you guys bitch and complain, but you buy it anyway, then the company isn't going to care. They're like, yeah, they screamed and we laughed all the way to the bank. We don't care because 10 million people bought our $15 content. Thank you very much. Even though you would get it for free on the PC, because you could not only make your own maps and missions on the PC versions of all these multiplayer online games like Call of Duties and, you know, your Halos and all that. There's another Call of Duty 2 map pack coming out. 5 maps for $8. The Halo map pack, I didn't mind the way they did that. You pay like $20 for 8 maps or something, but they said straight up front, hey, look, in 3 months, these are all going to be free for everyone, so that those crazies could go ahead and buy it, but then everyone will get it. Battle for Middle-earth 2, I just went to their website. It said, hey, if you pre-order now, you get 3 maps for 700 Microsoft points. 3 maps for $8.75. That's almost $3 a map. And, dude, these are real-time strategy game maps.
That's ridiculous.
These are not elaborate 4-hour gameplay per maps. This is a frickin' real-time strategy map.
Come on. It took someone like Bob maybe 15 minutes to strategically place that tree or that boulder where it is.
Give us the tools to do it ourselves. All the PC people can do it. They released the damn Battle for Middle-earth as a map editor. You can get it for the PC. Just make your own friggin' map and then send it to your friends. Don't spend $3.
How come the angrier Chris gets, the higher his voice gets? You know, this is ridiculous. I can't even take this anymore. I mean, you can just get money off this.
I'm so infuriated by this because it's going to sell. It's going to sell like mad. And then the company will be like, it's sold. These are things that we should not only be getting for free, because I haven't played Graw in a couple of months. We played it the other day because I was reminded about it. But
Chris only plays console for the free trips to Seattle.
Everyone already said, is it stupid if people buy it and it's a success? Who really is the winner? And the bottom line is that the gamers are not the winner, because there's too many in the world that are going to buy these things for convenience.
It's just economics.
I'm not at Microsoft because Microsoft isn't really setting these prices. Ubisoft is setting these prices. Activision with the Call of Duty is setting these prices. If you don't like it, don't buy it. If you actually bought it, even as much as you complain about it, you are now a statistic. You are now in the check column of the yes. And the next time they actually go to release a map pack, they're going to say, dude, tons of people bought it at $15. Let's see if we can go up to $17.50.
Next topic.
I got part two of the Ross Erickson interview. He was a big hit. I also got a lot of emails saying, hey, I've been meaning to ask how to get my game from, you know, game developers. I want to get my...
Is this going to be a short recording session? Is this going to be a short recording session because you have all...
Probably.
Okay.
Why? Did you need something that you needed to...
No, I was just wondering.
Did get some clarification on poker, because we're going to talk about poker in this interview. There is an 8-player maximum. They're having some issues with the camera with 8 people. Full motion video for 8 people sucks up a lot of bandwidth. They're debating a couple things. Possibly like a 4-player with video feeds. Maybe they could do something like... If it's your turn to bet, they could have the camera on you. They could do like a webcam where every 10 seconds the image refreshes.
How do we make Uno more dramatic?
Telling you, dude, Uno with the camera was... It's Saturday. How lame is this? Saturday night, I'm on Xbox Live Arcade playing Uno with people with webcams.
You're married, dude. What do you expect?
It sounds so weak, but it was a ton of fun. You guys came over Sunday, and for a couple hours, like Heather was playing, we're all sitting on the couch watching her play Uno. Just go to Kmart, buy the cards for $4, and we could have all played Uno. But no, it's so much cooler on the Xbox, and I don't know why it is, but it is. All right, so here we go. Here's our interview with Ross Erickson, Xbox Live. Check it out.
People love playing together, either cooperatively or competitively. Not that we're ruling out any single-player games from this point forward.
I would love to see more co-op.
The number of games that have sort of stacked up here that we're working through the production cycles on, co-op has become a really big, you know, point for me to work with developers on how to implement co-op of some kind. You don't want to force-fit something either and just try to say this is co-op when it really shouldn't be. But for the most part, we really press multiplayer hard with developers to think about bringing people together. Just generally about downloadable content as a whole. All of us as gamers have probably in our course of our time spent some money on expansion packs. Especially us PC gamers have been sort of used to just getting lots of free stuff too, and it's the nature of the world.
Absolutely right.
But in the live arcade space, especially at the price points we're talking about, we are encouraging developers to be thinking about extending the value of their game beyond that first purchase. I will make something available to you, maybe for free, but also a full-blown expansion that adds 20 levels to a 50-level game, let you choose to buy that or not and see if it's something you're really into or not.
That he's using that marketing speak, extending.
Well, I know. Marketing alert. You know, the fact is, it is a business for these developers and for us. Being able to fairly offer content up that has value to a subset of the market is really what it really boils down to. And if some people choose to say, hey, this really is valuable to me, I want this, be that, you know, a full level expansion pack or horse armor, I suppose, you know, that's... I suppose that's for the market to decide, and that you vote with your dollars, really.
And that's what we keep trying to drive home is, I almost bought the Street Fighter picture pack until I realized I only get 4 of the fighters.
Well, yeah. Well, exactly. And you go, you know what? I'm not into that. And it will teach us a lot from the kind of things that we should be offering for games, too. Because if no one cares, then we won't keep making it.
How much is the hot coffee mod? That's what I want to know.
There's been a lot of pressure about, where's all our stuff on Live Arcade? Where's all our stuff? In a sick and twisted way, because there's not as much as maybe people thought, horse armor sells like wildfire, because they're like, oh, sweet, I can finally buy something online. I have all these points. And they buy the horse armor.
I mean, this is truly, guys, capitalist days of supply and demand and buyer-seller. It's in its purest form. And if horse armor sells great at 150 points, despite some people grousing about it, then it's going to keep getting offered at that level until people stop buying it. The market drives itself to a point of equilibrium. I mean, if people will buy it, then people will keep making it.
And we'll
so it's the question of really, where is the value in the production of this stuff?
What upcoming games are coming? I think you have a comment to me on my 50% chance of 4 Xbox Live games.
Oh, dude, you are so going down with that.
You accept just random submissions. Do you have an email that you want to pimp?
Here's the problem. On the submission side of it, no, I don't do it that way, pretty much because there's some very specific copyright and issues associated with legally what you can look at before you have a non-disclosure with someone, simply because if they disclose something to us that we passed on, but we didn't sign a non-disclosure on, and then later something came out that was similar to but different, someone could scream, and believe me, they will, about,
right,
hey, you stole my idea, so you and I will be millions, etc.
So don't call us, we'll call you, type of thing.
Well, no, it's not that at all. It's just that when someone has a serious game they want to pitch and want to talk about, and I literally get half a dozen a day, the very first thing I do is find out, first of all, if they're, you know, someone legitimate, or is this some 15-year-old
kid
that says...
Like the people that email us,
familiar
with those people.
I really want to make this game, you know? Who are you? Well, I'm a 16-year-old in New Jersey, and I'm a good coder. I generally just gently let them down. If someone's legitimate and they've got a cool idea, and generally, even if it's just a small business just getting started, the first thing we'll do is set up a non-disclosure, a mutual non-disclosure with that company, so we can, confidently talk with each other, and so they have the confidence that they're going to be protected with their intellectual property ideas, and vice versa as well. The other thing I want to do is make sure that something else very, very similar to it, nigh and identical to it, isn't already in production, because again, as a managed portfolio, we don't want to have a situation where we're creating train wrecks on this, like, why did you ship three poker games?
Creating train wrecks? We do that every week.
I'm absolutely drowning in all that right now, so frankly, I'm not specifically out beating the paths for more games, because there's so many being pitched to us all the time. If all we made were games targeted to the hardcore, we'd obviously only be selling games to the hardcore, and we want to broaden the appeal of the games. I don't know if you guys have wives or girlfriends or significant others that are not gamers, but you put in a game of Uno or a game of Zuma or Bejeweled, and suddenly they're going, hey, I'm playing a video game.
I have to kick mine off of Bejeweled to get into Call of Duty. So thank you very much, Ross, for ruining
mine.
Sweet, thanks.
So become that rich and famous insurance programmer, you'll be able to maybe one day buy a second 360.
Dude, that's, yeah. Don't take that.
That was good, Ross. There's your ham sandwich. You wanted it? There you got it.
I could lose this. In a typical household where there's, you know, maybe mom, dad, hardcore gamer, a few other siblings maybe around, who knows, is that there's something in our arcade that literally can be sort of targeted for everybody. I have a 10-year-old daughter, for example, who really hasn't gotten much to play yet on the console.
With the newer consoles, they're getting just more and more powerful. They're matching up with PCs, and is that where you're drawing the distinction between gaming experience on a PC and gaming experience on a console, is just accessibility?
It's about where I want to play. I mean, if I'm a single solitary guy, yeah, being a PC gamer's pretty simple scenario because I'm in one place doing it and I don't really have any competition for that platform. But if you're in a family situation with, you know, any kids, for
example,
hey,
I played Quake on Linux and it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, go with that.
One more, it's a hat trick.
It's a question for Xbox Live is, look, when you're in that living room experience, there are other people maybe coming in and out of the household, and if mom isn't, you know, working and she's at home, that's so stereotypical. You better edit that.
She's washing dishes in the back, barefoot, pregnant.
So, you know, when Jane Cleaver is playing video games, seriously, if there's somebody available to the household, you know, the ideal scenario for us is literally people are kind of lining up to get their experience on Xbox, and it becomes a sort of central entertainment device.
My point of view is when I buy a game console, I want something that plays games great.
Yeah.
And when I buy a stereo, I want something that plays music great.
Right.
And when I want to watch TV, I'll get something like a TiVo, something that can cut out commercials and does that functionality great. You know, and whenever anyone pitches the idea of a convergence device, it's a device that usually doesn't do any of, you know, it does all of those tasks in a mediocre fashion.
And once again, we got to cut the interview with Ross a little short. We didn't even get a chance to talk about poker. We didn't get a chance to talk about the wish list games, the games that are coming on Xbox Live Arcade, but this show has gone a little bit over, so we'll just probably throw it in next week, because it's a lot of good stuff. So I don't want to cut it out. So look forward to that next week, the third appearance of Ross Erickson.
Next topic.
Porting games to the next generation. 360 developer Matt Lee had an article online a couple weeks ago where he talked about concerns with porting games for next generation consoles, specifically the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360. This is the game dude who programmed Dope Wars for the Palm. He says some negative things about the PlayStation 3 architecture. Go figure, he's an Xbox employee. I am not knowledgeable enough about this stuff to comment on it, I don't think more than about 10 of our listeners want to know that level of detail anyways, but without getting all dorky, he's saying kind of what we were saying all along, which is that the 360 and the PS3 have different architectures structurally, so it's going to be a porting a game, which just means you write it for one and you move it to the other one, the way that PC games used to come out, and then they would be moved onto the Xbox. Going from the 360 to the PS3 and back, he says it'll kind of be a wash for power and performance. They're pretty much identical with their performance and the speed and the graphics and all that other good stuff. It's just going to be difficult to do, so a lot of development teams are going to have to be split into two units, one for the PS3, one for the 360.
This makes MC Frags a lot ponder. I wonder if this is a purposeful marketing move, so we could lock a particular developer into our one architecture. So hey, you have a very popular title, and guess what? It's only available on my platform. Well, that's going to want Mr. Johnny Consumer to buy it for my platform. A conspiracy, I smell a conspiracy.
But this is one more step from what they were doing last generation, which is Grand Theft Auto, I'm going to snatch it up, I'm going to lock it up, I'm going to pay you X amount of dollars so you cannot release it for the Xbox for X number of months.
Yeah, but why dish out all that cash to a developer when you could just simply make it so expensive for them to develop for two platforms that they won't consider it in the first place?
Absolutely correct. So now we're getting to the point where we're kind of rooting for the indie guys, as it is the indie guys' host. Now you're going to basically have EA and Ubisoft and, you know, those five big development houses that can actually afford the money to develop two, you know, the same game for both systems simultaneously. They'll be totally different games for all intent purposes, because if it's going to be this hard to port, which is what we're hearing. It's just rant week. Just ranting about everything.
Gaming world's going to pot. Nothing but greed. Everyone after your wallets. It's not for the love of games anymore.
Our forum question that was 2 weeks ago, I think. Whose responsibility is it for a bad game? So ultimately, whose fault is it? The publisher, the developer, the gamer, the QA department, the marketing department, big business slash money in general, or nobody? If you go to dreamstation.cc, on the left-hand side, there's a link to our forums. Go to our general forums, and there you will see the weekly poll topic. I want to ask Ross.
Wow, that's a hard question. From the sitting in the offices of a publisher, I'd say it's never the publisher, but... In all seriousness, customers buy crappy games, then what do you expect? Boils down to the talent level of the developer. I mean, if you're going to really pin this down somewhere, ultimately the people who create the art and write the code ultimately are the most responsible.
It's the publisher. They're the ones that are forcing developers to put these games out early. They give you 3, 4, you know, however many, you know, we're going to give you 12 months to get the title out the door, no matter where it is in the development cycle. That's why we're patching our games.
So it's interesting that the developer blames the publisher and the publisher blames the developer. Keith, did you happen to have the answers up there on...
Secondly, publishers don't want to back interesting and new ideas. I mean, they want something that's going to be, you know, broad market appeal, which means just like everything else that's out there. So publishers don't want to take risks.
What are the percentages and the answers, I guess, would be the first?
Publisher with 12.5%. The developer with 42.5%. The Q&A department, no one thinks they're at fault for anything. Gamers themselves are 12.5% at fault.
Wow.
Tom, marketing is only 2.5% at fault. Business influence got 20%. Other got 10%.
So what are a couple of decent comments?
All right, this had the word poo in it, so I'm going to read it by Satan Banana. A bad game is a combination of all of these. Everyone has to do an evenly crappy job on the game to make it bad. And how do gamers make a game bad? We aren't making the game, just paying $60 for a steaming pile of poo. These are long. They're like paragraphs.
I think I remember Rothbard having a good rant, but his was like 3 pages long.
Yeah, his is quite long. And
oh, that means that's good. That means that the forum goers are actually getting into the poll questions, so we can tell when
Poble
we have a
decent. Poble is dead, says developers, because if you design the crap, then you designed and coded the crappy game, and that is what we try to play.
So they're good, but due to show length, we can't read them? That's a bummer. We're sorry, fans, but we don't have time for you.
They're all like 3 paragraphs long.
In the future, you'll need to be more concise. We need sound bites, not actual thoughts.
I would love to have audio. The more audio, the better, because I can throw it up. Can you just read off a couple of the names so at least they get a little bit of pimpage for doing a job well done?
Rothbart had many good points in there. Altered Weapon had some good points. Redeema, Ninja Fae. I accidentally clicked on Chris's little gamertag profile button while trying to scroll.
Yeah, baby! Uno point!
Yeah, Temple Dog started something up with that. Takeo Ray. I mean, there's a lot of people, Smedley. All these people wrote, like, big...
So thank you, podcast forum dwellers. I think we've already kind of discussed our thoughts last show, to be honest. Next week's poll. So this one is submitted by Ninja Fae. See, if you guys just do your thing on the forums, we'll find you. We read the forums.
Are increasing demands for hardware the true reason behind the decline of PC gaming? options are, yes, let's utilize what's out there. Yes, but not entirely true about hardware demands. No, but it doesn't help at all. Not at all. And then, like, other.
That's our forum question for this week.
Next topic.
This one's from Larry. Larry says, hey, I just finished listening to show number 60. I really enjoyed it. Great work. Ross was a great addition and should be on more often. Ross was really good. Too bad you guys usually suck. You guys do a good job. You make this one of my favorite podcasts, if not my favorite. I even have the pirate song as my ringtone. Keep up the good work. Excellent,
nice.
Excellent.
Bob, any royalties on that?
No.
This one is about Command & Conquer the First Decade. Tom, this one was kind of pointed directly at you. I think I even copied you on this one, but I'm going to read it on the air anyways. To whoever it was that bought CNC the First Decade, this one's from Jake. I'll make this quick. The bug that makes playing the original Command & Conquer game impossible to play is called the corner bug. Basically, if you have a unit near the corner of the screen and it comes into view for the first time, the game will crash. I'd say that's more than a bug. I don't know why, but getting rid of ctfmon.exe fixes it. Basically, dude uninstalled Microsoft Office and it seemed to work. So, Tom, all you have to do to get Command & Conquer, a 10-year-old game, to work is to not do any productivity on your computer at all. Only use it for gaming.
Wait, so Microsoft Office is conflicting with Command & Conquer?
Supposedly.
What kind of crazy world are we living in?
Well, turn the language bar off. I mean, it pops up down there in the bottom next to this.
No, I have. Tray. I do. By default, I have the language bar off.
Oh, no, I'm just
off.
Saying.
So none of the quality assurance people at EA, or whomever was doing the quality assurance, had Microsoft Office installed on their PC while they were testing this?
Apparently not.
Okay. Just asking the questions.
All right, this will be the last one we're going to read from the mailbag. This one's from Josh, a.k.a. Master Chief 0987, and Mr. Spankers on Xbox Live. Hey, Bob, Chris, Keith, Tom, and Phil. I've been listening to the show ever since it was put on iTunes, and it's easily the best podcast around. Why, thank you very much, Josh. So many others are so boring. Yours is crazy.
You're a good liar.
And unpredictable, except for the mailbag shouted by Keith, which, unpredictably, Keith didn't do this week. See? We're just crazy. Wednesday is easily the highlight of my week. I'm sorry that stuff.
You need to get out more.
Thanks for the entertainment for the past year, and here is to many years to come. Tom, thank you for recommendation of Grandma's Boy. I rented it a few weeks ago and loved it. It was hilarious. The DDR scene was the best. That was the mailbag. I have a whole bunch more mailbags that I have to read. I apologize that I haven't gotten to them. Without the laptop, since I switched jobs, they took my laptop. It's coming tomorrow. I actually got a Dell. That's a story for a different time, so we're not going to get into it right now. But I appreciate the emails. Keep them coming. If you send audio, it would have first priority, just as an FYI.
Next topic.
That was pretty much our show. Today's outro was actually provided by Failed Halo. Again, we'll have their link in the show notes. www.dreamstation.cc for news, reviews, interviews, forums, and our downloadable show archive. Send us some friggin' audio already. Jeez, some comments, some questions, some feedback.
Especially you English kids and you Australians.
Random animal noises.
Video game show at dreamstation.cc. Spread the word to your friends, family, local gaming stores, etc. We welcome you aboard, first-time listeners, and hope you'll come back same time next week. All right, peeps. I'll see you on Xbox Live. I'll see you on Xfire. Gamertag, C. Paladino. Xfire name is Dino56K. If you guys want to get
me staring in your window in the dead of night holding a large knife.
Thank you, guys, and we'll talk to you next week. All right, so you were telling us what other games you worked on.
So I started with EA on Medal of Honor, The Rising Sun. I was a background artist for that, and at that time it was every environment artist had one mission to themselves. Now everybody works on everything. So that was Yamashita's Gold, level 7, but really level 6 because mission got cut there at the last minute. But the mission is like you go through this Burmese jungle, and the end is this huge Buddhist temple, which I actually modeled after this huge temple in Thailand. And you go through the mission, you have to rescue this fighter pilot, this downed British fighter pilot. His name happened to be Raj.
Are you British then?
So this is the awesome part, right? So it looked just like me for the most part, right? It was like all modeled after me and stuff. The guy who did my voice...
You couldn't do your own voice?
They wouldn't let me do my own voice because I'm not sad. And I was so... I was like, I'm Raj.
Because you're not me, you're not sad.
I'm not part of the Screen Actors Guild.
Oh.
So the guy who did my voice, they brought in, is a guy from Seinfeld, who was the guy who opened that Pakistani restaurant across the street.
Really?
Yeah, the very good man. Very nice man. Very nice. So it's that dude, right? So So the recording, no, this guy is actually a really good voice actor, right? He does all kinds of voices and stuff. But they gave him weird direction. First, he has this like southern, like Texan accent. So he's like talking, he's like, yeah, I'm not even trying to emulate it, right? He's like coming in, he's got this southern accent. It's like, okay, it's supposed to be British, right? So then his accent changes when he's in the mission. You know, he's got this British accent.
Wow.
So he's got a British accent. Then, in the end, three different accents, now American, right? just like totally American accent.
He's a paranoid schizophrenic.
So I'm playing through the mission before we're shipping, and I'm like, okay, we're coming in. He's southern. It's supposed to be British. What's going on? Okay, fine. I can deal with that if it's like the continuity's there. Rescue him, and he's like, thank you very much, with a totally strong British accent. I'm like, what the fuck, British?
Tell it good time, chap.
Seriously. And at the end, he's like, we got to get out of the temple. Yeah, sounds like he's California.
With pilots,
so
he's a little crazy.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. He's a little crazy. Yeah.
He's like, thank you so much for rescuing me. I'm like, dude, at least have one of the two previous accents that you had. So that was a little thorn in my side there. That was my character, but I did enjoy the fact that if I couldn't do the voice, do at least three different accents.
Right.